I get paintings back from a gallery, and it's been in three different galleries, and it's been on my online shop, and it's been in a third party online shop, and it's 5 years old. I think, all right, you've had a good life, but I think that's about your use by date. Time for a new painting.
Welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul. And this week, definitely get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan. And I have a guest with me this week. I would like you to say hello to Scott Dunham. And that is spelled D-U-N-E-L-M. But we will have that in the show notes for you to look up and find him. Hello, Scott. Welcome to the podcast.
G'day. Thanks for having me.
You got in touch with me and to talk about your approach to making art. Tell me what's special, because I think this is a really worthwhile subject. And I put a post out on Instagram about it and was overwhelmed, particularly with one issue around this area. But we're talking about the environmental impact, basically, of making art, aren't we? Why is this so important to you?
It's important to me because I don't know. It's always been important to me. This growing up in different environments in Australia, I was very observant and mindful of what was around me, and you know the landscapes that I was playing in as a kid and surfing in when I was a little bit older. And it just was one of those things where it naturally went from a subject, you know, being eco-friendly was a subject in everybody's mind, to something that I wanted to do. And one of the main driving factors was actually my time working at Australia Zoo. So Steve Irwin's, you know, the famous crocodile hunter, worked at his zoo for most of my 20s. And when you work in an environment like that and you're surrounded by 600 other employees and, you know, staff who are just encapsulated in that eco-friendly, that saving wildlife and habitats and all that sort of thing around you, it goes into everything that you do. So it went into my surfing. I was worried about the wax that I was putting on my board and the neoprene wetsuits. And then it came into my art. I was thinking, you know, it was gradual. It wasn't one day I just sort of had a light bulb moment. I kind of did, but it was gradual. And and it just went from there. It was one of those things where I just had to change, because I would have felt myself being a hypocrite if I could change one aspect of my life to become eco-friendly or environmentally minded, and then not do it with the other thing that I love. So that was art.
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing, isn't it? Because I think there are almost two stages of this. One is an awareness and an education about it.
Yes, exactly. And I think everybody has that to an extent.
I think they do to an extent. I have to say, reading through your book, the ebook, I don't want to say it's made me feel guilty, but it's made me feel not particularly well informed. And like, it's not been top of my list.
Making you feel guilty is definitely not on the top of my priorities with writing this book. That's for sure.
Okay, but it's really,
it is overwhelming though. It is overwhelming. Yeah,
it is.
Just the sheer amount of things that we have to think about. Because when I first started the process, the book took me 10 years, a bit over 10 years, from writing down notes of what I was doing. And the initial thing was actually a blog. I wrote a blog post, and then I did a guest blog post. And it all sort of came from there. There were comments and people emailing me, and I thought, okay, well, I'll sort of put this into one location so that people can find it. And then it just snowballed, and 10 years later I had a book.
As all the best ideas, they just start and they snowball. I mean, it's interesting you talk about blogs. I have a blog on my post on my website, which is just an experiment I did one summer holidays, really, about making Bista ink with soot from the fire. And it was just an experiment to play with my daughter. But I can't tell you how many hits it's had from Pinterest. So there is definitely a desire and a need for this. So we're going to go into lots of the questions that came up on Instagram and talk through, you know, what the book covers and what people might want to know. But before we do that, let's just take a step back a little bit and find out a bit more from you. So tell us where you are in Australia, and also what we usually talk about at this stage is what you've been working on this week. So in terms of your art and your creativity, before we get into the eco stuff, what does a normal artist week look like for you? Because it's always nice to know the practice and the person behind it.
Alice, you know there is no normal artist week. I've heard you ask this question to so many people, and even yourself when yourself and Louise are talking about it. There's no normal week. So I have just moved, like literally within the last several days, to a whole new place.
Okay.
I was living in the desert. So I was living in the central desert of Australia up until... I don't know, 2 and a bit weeks ago, working with Aboriginal artists in an art centre, helping them facilitate their art. Anyway, that's separate.
But also, we have... that's on your website, isn't it, that exhibition? There's records of that exhibition.
That not necessarily. That, I mean, there is and there isn't. I've posted about it on my social media because I was employed by...
Okay.
An Aboriginal corporation to come in and help them with their art, basically.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fairly complex sort of a system, but I come in as a studio manager and I helped 30, 40, 50 other artists with their art for a period of time. So this week I have moved to tropical North Queensland. I'm now in Cairns, right at the top of Queensland. So I am a Queenslander originally. It's just very different. It's tropical, it's humid, it storms and rains a lot, as you can imagine. So here I am. So my first week is getting my studio ready, so that's going to be this week. But in a typical, I say that with inverted commas, using my fingers, typical week is it's such a hard question to answer.
Just tell us a little bit about what are your paintings like? What scale do you work at? Okay. What's your subject matter?
So I prioritize my paintings. I will always put commissions first, simply because I've got that person. I'm engaged with that person or those people. Sometimes I have several at one time, and they're normally larger. So they're normally larger pieces. I reckon the smallest commission I've done would have been, I'm going to say, a 30 by 40 inch. And I've only done one. Most of them are at least twice that size. So there is a lot of time. I'm working up to 2.5 meters in width sometimes. So large scale. I don't necessarily like to do smaller stuff. I'm not sure why, but big, I just love throwing my arms up and getting movement into it. Yeah. I stand up while I paint as well. I've got a bad back, so I stand up and you know, I've got my full body into it.
He's moving, everyone. I can see the video. He's moving as he's talking.
I'm moving a lot. Yeah. I wish this was a video podcast. That would make things interesting.
We might put a snip of you on YouTube. You never know.
Dancing. So that's always first. Commissions are always first. I might paint, if I've got a deadline, I might paint 30 to 40 hours in a week.
That's a lot, but that's painting time.
Yeah, it is, and most of that's overnight as well. I get my inspiration later in the day, and and then I really go for it at night. I don't know what it is, but I'm more productive later on.
Okay. Yeah. And do you sell your work mainly through galleries, or do you have those relationships directly with clients?
A bit of everything. So I sell directly through my website, and I have people, I have a lot of collectors come to me directly. I am represented by a couple of different galleries. Luckily enough, one of those is actually here in Cairns. So I'm fortunate to have that relationship, had it for about 4 or 5 years now. And the owner has asked me to just experiment and try new things, which is what I've been wanting to do.
That's nice.
It's good. Yeah, she just lets me go for it. Yeah. I've got a lot of ideas, obviously, with this transition going from red desert to tropical lush rainforest. So yeah, there's a lot of ideas sort of brewing in there.
But and your work, though, subject wise, kind of celebrates the natural world, doesn't it, really? I mean, you're not portrait painter, or so this is kind it all mixes together and springs together.
It does, yeah. I'm an ocean artist primarily. So it's from that surf background. The evolution of my art has been, or the subjects of my art has been, I learnt as a young child, 10 or 11 years old, traditional landscapes in oil. Mm-hmm. And that I moved to the coast, or back to the coast, and started surfing when I was about 13 or 14. And then I just got infatuated with it. And then so my subject matter of what I was painting was very clearly based around that. It was surf art, but it was still very traditional, you know, see a scene, paint the scene sort of thing.
Yep.
And then I wanted to break out of that, and I eventually went into acrylics and being a bit looser with it and a bit more contemporary. So yeah, that's where I'm at now. But it's always evolving. I mean,
yeah,
we're artists. We want our work to evolve. We're always, you know, adding new things and trying new things. And yeah, so that's where I'm at.
Okay, that's a really good lead-in, because one of the things, so I'm just going to, just a brief guide, we can't possibly cover everything that you cover in this ebook, but just, there will be a link in the show notes for everybody who wants to get it. It's funny because it's not a massive great book. How long is it? 70 pages, something like that? And
I've got the hard copy here. It's 105 pages.
Oh, okay. I've got the PDF version. So that's...
which will probably be less, yeah.
Yeah. But it's broken down into a lot of different sections. So it's paint, it's materials, it's substrate, it's canvas, it's stretchers, where you get your easels from, all the considerations about all the elements that it takes to put artwork together, packaging, all sorts of stuff in there. So it's a really good... reference guide. I found it really helpful, and just as a reference, like I said earlier, to prompt me into just thinking about some of the considerations that I might not be aware of. And I think as artists, we're always making decisions. Like, making an art is a whole series of decisions and choices that we make. And what this does, I think if you try and do it all at once, perhaps it might be overwhelming. But if you just take on board some of these elements, some of these considerations, next time you're thinking about how you package your work, make a different choice about it, and it just points you in the right direction. So like I say, we're not going to be able to cover everything, but I think you've already talked about how you started with oils and moved to acrylics, as did I.
Yes.
And this is one of the questions that came up, essentially, which is better?
I don't think there is a better. There is and there isn't. So there's pros and cons for each. And I actually literally list pros and cons, you would have noticed, for everything that I go through and analyze in the book. Do we want to start with pros or cons? I don't know. So oils, obviously you need to use a solvent. That's the issue with oils. The oil in oils is quite good. It's usually walnut or linseed oil, something like that. Depends how it's refined. You know, those processes can have some sort of effect on environmental friendliness.
Yep.
If you're making your own, that's even better, but I don't recommend it if you're not. I think we go into this. I think there's a question about this later. If you're not used to it, you don't know how it all works, I wouldn't recommend it. It can be dangerous. Acrylics, obviously, are literally plastic. Acrylic paint is plastic, and that is the...
There's no getting away from that, is there?
No, exactly. Unless you can find an acrylic paint that uses a different binder that isn't petrochemical-based, basically, which I have found and is highly recommended in the book and probably the most sought-after thing. I've noticed people coming back to me and saying, hey, that was a really good
This is this particular brand, though, that seemed to be only available in Australia.
It's available worldwide. They will ship worldwide, but they're not in physical stores. So they've got an online shop. I think they're in a couple of shops, maybe around Melbourne. They're from Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah.
And it's called Hydrocryl. It has an organic binder, basically, and they don't go and put any petrochemicals or anything like that in it. I can't go into details of exactly the binder. Yeah. It's there's patents and all sorts of things that, you know, that they won't let me get into. But yeah.
But even though this is a strong consideration for you, we all go acrylics, plastic, yuck, horrible plastic. We want to be reducing our use of it. I think there's a bigger question behind all of this, which is ultimately, and it kind of goes even deeper to why we make art and what is the point of it all, and is all of it just landfill anyway? You know, because as I was reading this, I was thinking all of these questions that we do, you know, in life, we make all these choices, you know, what car we drive, how often we travel, you know, whether we travel abroad, how often we buy new clothes, whether we buy synthetic fiber. There are so many choices. At the end of the day, nothing is going to be perfect. Like,
no, you're right.
You can't live without having any impact or making any consumption or creating any waste. So for me, and my husband is an environmental lawyer, so he spends his life dealing with, you know, stuff like this. And, you know, there are certain small decisions that you can make, but I think it's quite easy to get really hung up in one tiny area of it without thinking of the big picture. So what I'm getting here is, while we can talk about the specifics of using oil or acrylic, there is a bigger thing for me, which is about how much you get through, making sure that you're creating work that is going to be appreciated and actually used, rather than just creating something. And that's a really difficult thing for an artist, because we still have to create work that is not necessarily perhaps successful or always bought. That's a waste. How do you square that?
I personally only will paint something if it's going to sell. I don't do experimental stuff, in terms of I don't have canvases lying around that I'm just sort of mucking around with and trying things. The pieces that I finish with and sell in the gallery or to somebody is my experimental piece. And I guess that's how I get around it. I know that there's a lot of artists who may not be at the level of being able to sell everything that they paint. So it is a lot harder. Reusing older canvases is one of those things.
Definitely.
I get paintings back from a gallery, and it's been in three different galleries, and it's been on my online shop, and it's been in a third party online shop, and it's 5 years old. I think, all right, you've had a good life, but I think that's about your use by date. Time for a new painting. I'm not precious about that sort of thing. I don't get hung up on, oh, this is my creation, my baby, and I can't let it go or anything like that. I can let go of this stuff quite easily. Maybe that's just my mindset. Maybe I'm heartless or something. I don't know.
No, I'm the same. I quite enjoy working over
old paintings. I'm very pragmatic about it.
You know, when it feels like it's had it, as you say, it's had its time. And or sometimes I look at a painting and I think, actually, I'm not going to show you again. I don't feel good about showing you again. I'm not interested in that anymore. I can reuse that. So this is the old impact thing, isn't it? Reduce, recycle, reuse.
Yeah,
those are exactly the key things to hold in mind. And also, of course, your approach of working mainly on commission, so that you know that a painting has a home to go to. You know, there is a specific purpose for it. But I just raise this because I think this is something that artists do worry about on a bigger picture. But again, unless we're all going to end up living in caves and, you know, not wearing a lot, we want to live in houses that have things on the wall. And perhaps it's still a better solution to buy from an individual artist who's putting something good out in the work than it is to buy mass-produced printed canvases that are made and shipped in China and sold in IKEA.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the difference is education on the buyer's point, not necessarily the artist's end there. Just that, yeah, that mass sort of buying or you know, whatever it's called, that sort of culture of, you know, material things. I've never liked those sorts of prints, and I've always talked people out of them and buying directly from an artist as well. So maybe that's our job to help point a buyer in the right direction. I'm not sure, but that sort of stuff is a waste.
So when you're choosing then, because this was something that I didn't know, so moving on to kind of canvases and making that choice between, tell us the difference of the impact of cotton, linen or hemp, because that is something that I have never paid any attention to.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I cringe at the thought of using cotton canvas simply because of there's two reasons. I don't like the quality of it. It's very easy to tear. But the main reason is it's just so heavy on the environment to produce. Even the smallest amount of cotton uses I've got stats in the book.
The liters of water.
Tens of thousands of liters
of
water just for a kilogram of canvas.
Yeah.
It is astonishing. But not even just the water use, it's the production of the canvas as well. There's a lot of bleach that's used to get it white, which is strange because you look at cotton when it's out in the field and it's white. White. I'm not sure why they need more bleach to be whiter than it naturally is. There's the chemicals that go with it. It's highly dependent on, you know, pesticides and fungicides and all those sorts of things. It takes a lot of nutrients from the soil and doesn't replenish. There's a lot of issues there with canvas. Linen, on the other hand, which is very similar to hemp in terms of the fiber and the plant itself, how it grows.
They're longer fibers, aren't they? So it's stronger.
Longer and stronger fibers. Yep. Yeah, much stronger fibers. And you can feel that. You pick up a section of hemp or linen canvas versus cotton at the same weight, and you give them a stretch, you give them a tug and try and rip them, and you can feel the difference. And it just feels better to work on. It's more rigid and, I don't know, there's something about it. I'm moving again. there's something about it. Yeah, I just love it.
Do you pay for that? You do. So it's rough percentage. Do you know off the top of your head, rough percentage-wise, how much more expensive it is? I mean, it's a little bit, you can't really compare. It's apples and oranges, isn't it? Because there are all sorts of other things, weight of stretcher and weight of the fabric and...
There's also different qualities of cotton between, you know, a good cotton and a $2 shop cotton.
Yeah.
Or I'm not sure what you might call them there, but
there's
day and night between the quality of those even. But yeah, you're looking at, I don't know, I've got a 44 by 44 inch behind me and what's that, a meter? I'm going to say you're looking at about 70 odd. This is in Australian dollars.
Yeah.
About 70 odd dollars for raw linen per meter. And it's 2 meters and 16 long anyway. So, you've got that extra. Cotton, I think you're looking at more at about $30 or $40 per meter for a good quality cotton.
Okay, but that is a good point. So you can expect to pay a little bit more from it, but if you're... It lasts longer.
Its archival qualities are so much more superior than cotton. You know, we've only been using cotton canvas.
We know that from the Egyptians.
Duck cloth.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Great example. We've only been using duck cloth cotton for... I'm not even sure. It's very recent.
Okay.
Like the last 30 or 40 years, whereas linen has been used for hundreds of years, and hemp was used by the Renaissance masters. So if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. The other thing I should mention about hemp and linen, hemp is actually quite hard to get at the moment as an artist canvas.
Okay.
It's very limited anywhere in the world, and it's much more expensive even on top of linen. So linen is more readily available as an artist material. There's no hemp canvas for artists specifically anywhere in the world.
As a kind of off-the-shelf thing, you just can't find it.
Mm.
Right.
No. You have to go and buy raw hemp canvas from a supplier, and it's usually used for all sorts of things. Couch materials and high-end clothing and that sort of thing. So,
okay,
it's very hard to get.
But if you're stretching yourself, because one of the things I have to say I haven't done yet so far, I've just bought all my canvases as made sizes, but I'm thinking of going bigger. So I'm looking into buying it myself and stretching it myself. But what I noticed was actually it's the cost of the stretcher bars. Those are the things.
Yes.
The actual relative cost of the material. So it might be more expensive, linen to cotton, but as an overall cost contributing to what makes up a big canvas, that's perhaps not that much of an extra cost. So that's definitely something that I'm going to think about. Here's the other thing, though, that comes up from this about cotton. Cleaning up. The biggest thing that came up was cleaning up. We'll get into that. But lots of different solutions that people had for cleaning up. And one of the things that I've always thought is using cotton rags versus disposable paper type rag cloths. And, having started as an oil painter, I always have a bag of the kids' pajamas or t-shirts or, when they have
old undies, that sort of thing.
Yes. All of that kind of stuff.
That's underwear for American listeners. I don't know if they say undies, do they?
Undies. I know what undies is. Kids' vests. Little kids' vests used to be absolutely brilliant if they weren't. But again, if they're not clothing that you can pass on for somebody else to use, sometimes, you feel guilty cutting it up for rags if it's clothing that could go on and be used by somebody else. So it's difficult, isn't it, making these decisions. But what I find with the cloth cleanup is that they last much longer. And
I've had some for years, years and years and years. Yeah.
Do you wash yours? Because then we're back into stuff in the water supply, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't. To get around what you were just saying with feeling guilty about maybe it's old clothing that could be handed down to somebody else, mine are usually at a state where they can't be handed down. I've got holes all through them, whether it's shirts or undies or whatever. They're a write-off.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to be wearing them.
No.
So yeah, I use them for rags, and I've got some that are crunchy. I can, they're almost like a board now. They're so crunchy. I've got one specifically for my palette knife, one specifically for after I've washed my brush, one for while there's still paint on it. I'm a little bit systematic and weird like that. I've got a wash jar for my warm colors and my cool colors as well. So that's
a really good idea.
It's strange, but it kind of works for me.
I think it is a good idea, but also this idea of grading this is something that I've been doing recently. So rather than just having the cleanup cloth, like I'll have, this is the one that's really filthy and quite paint encrusted and really quite hard, which sometimes can be a really good alternative paintbrush, people, if you want to get different kind of marks.
Oh yeah, painting. It is. Yes.
Those kind of those cloths that you just have lying around can be really useful, but having some that are mucky, dried, heavy, and some that are less used, and then you have a kind of natural progression. The less dirty ones become the more dirty ones, and eventually one gets so filthy that you've got to throw it away. But I do the same thing with water, but I haven't thought of having two water jars for a warm and a cool color, partly because when I'm actually painting, I don't use water to wash my brushes. I just pick up another brush and just so I end up having about 8 brushes on the go. Some are kind of, you know, light colors or dark colors, warm and cool, and I don't actually wash my brushes. I'll just carry on picking up paint and mixing new paint for
more
the
brushes,
but rather than washing in the process. So that may be why I've never had that warm or cool wash. But what I have started doing is filtering out the water at the end when I'm at the wash up stage. And this was the biggest question that we had. What do you do with acrylic washing up water?
It is the age old question. And I saw that. I did go through everyone's comments and had a look, and it is probably the most contentious one as well. Oh, I wouldn't say it's the most contentious thing of the whole book or being an eco-friendly artist, but I don't think there is a perfect system yet.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm still waiting for it. So I have researched the different things that people do with the kitty litter, and which some people do and say it's fine. Some people use and hate it, absolutely hate it. So I mean, if you prefer it, then go for it.
But again, you know, it's a weird thing, isn't it? You're buying something and using it specifically.
I know, you're buying
it's
something
been manufactured
else,
and da da da, and people pour into sand and that, all sorts of things.
Yeah, all sorts of things to filter it out. So one of the main ones, and we had a very brief chat about this over email, was Golden Paint's crash system. So what they do is they add two chemical components to the wastewater to basically separate the paint or the pigment and the water, which makes it easier to filter and then allows the water to be thrown away. The problem with that is you're adding chemical components, which I have a big question mark over instantly. Mm. One of those elements is aluminium sulfide, I believe. Sulfate. Yes, that's right. Which turns water acidic immediately and is corrosive to your skin, eyes, and lungs, and that sort of thing. So be very careful. If you do go down this route, be very careful. A mask, which everybody has at the moment, gloves, that sort of thing, a well-ventilated area. The second is an aluminium. Okay, now that part is the aluminium. The second part is the coagulator. So the aluminium changes the pH level, and then there's the coagulator. Makes it all stick together. All of the pigment sticks together.
Yep.
It's easier to filter out.
Yeah.
And it's completely taken away from the wastewater.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got chemicals there. So that's my first question mark. How necessary is it to really filter it out that much? I'm not quite sure. I know that we need to, but I want to find a more eco-friendly way. I want to find something that's earth-friendly that we can put into the water that will do the coagulating.
Okay.
I think we've said, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is about how much of the paint actually goes into the water in the first place. So what I try to do now is when I've got my paints at the end of the day is, you know, any paint that is on the brush itself. So I'll have a palette knife and I'll make sure that I scrape any paint that is off on the brush off onto a little pile on my palette. I use a stay wet palette so I can make sure that I keep it for another day. That's the biggest thing, is just not wasting it, so you don't have to buy more in the first place. So
the chunkiest stuff will also get stuck in, if you're throwing it down the drain, you're going to have some problems with the plumber pretty soon. So getting that stuff out, first and foremost, is probably the biggest thing. I know that there's microparticles and microplastics, which are also a problem, but you've got that initial problem of the big chunky bits. I put them into a little bucket, a little container, and over the year, it'll just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually throw it away. I'm using hydrocryl, which is a food grade paint, though, so I'm quite okay to go and put that in the bin. If you're using pigments that have cadmium in it or anything like that, you'll want to go to, dispose of them at your local council or wherever it might be where they allow you to do hazardous materials. That's just for that part. That's the hard bits that have dried up and they're chunky and we can see them. That's probably the easy part. Yeah. And then there's the whole.
The other part is when it's still wet, though, I keep it. So you have your different watercolors. I have little pots, like little salad pots with lids, and I will keep my paint in. Firstly, I will keep any leftover paint in there. And again, I tend to do it by value at the moment. So I have a light pot and a dark pot, and it ends up being kind of that lovely sludgy color, but it's really, really useful. Like if you want a white, but you don't want super pure white, you just get a little bit of your sludge and you mix it into white, and instantly you've got this really lovely, rich white that you can use in your painting. So I find it really useful. And what I've been trying to do recently is do the same thing when I'm cleaning up my brushes. So like with the rags, having a different stage of rags, I will have a first stage brush wash, so when I've scraped off the thick paint that I want to keep and reuse the next day, the first stage, and it ends up being quite like double cream kind of texture. So I'll just plunge my brushes in all of them. So it ends up being mud, squidgy grey colour, but it's quite thick, but it's got the majority of the paint off the brush into this water. And I end up with a quite nice, useful pot of sludgy mix.
Like a grey, it turns out, it depends on the pigments you're using, obviously, but it'll turn out as a grey or a burnt umber or a raw umber sludge.
And sometimes if you've been working with a particular colour on one day, it can be a little bit more coloured. So you can end up with a lovely deep orangey one or a bluey one. And those I might try to keep in separate pots. But again, they're really useful when you're working the next day. If you've got that, if you're used to using heavy body paint and you just want to soften it a bit, you can pour some of this lovely leftover double cream consistency sludge into your paint and you've got this lovely rich mix. And that's as far as I've got about helping me feel like I'm chucking less down the sink. Because after you've done that, and then you wipe the brushes on any rags, and then the water that's left over is not so good. What I find doesn't really work is keeping the next stage bucket of water to separate out or evaporate. It just takes
on its own. Especially with acrylics. So with oils, there's that separation between pigment and binder, simply because that's the nature of oils. It's always going to do that, which is why I think Golden Paints came up with the crash system using the aluminium sulfate and whatever the other ingredient was. That's already happened in the oil, and we need to figure out how to do it with acrylic.
Does the coffee filter thing work?
Yes.
It does.
Some people say no. Maybe it depends on your coffee filter. Yeah.
Okay.
I do it several times. So what I've been doing lately is first I'll put it through a strainer, just a regular strainer, one bucket to another. That gets out the chunky bits, and then it goes through stockings, like mesh stockings. That'll filter it again, and then the last one is the coffee filters. I do two filters. Takes a long time to filter it.
Right. So here's my question.
Doesn't filter everything, though. Doesn't filter
right.
everything.
This is my question perfect. On this. So to get rid of, okay, continuous, but minuscule amounts of small elements of paint water in the water system, you've now been and bought three plastic buckets, which have used a lot more plastic.
I find them all over the place. I'm not necessarily buying them, but
okay,
they're from other, you know, gardening projects or what, you know, whatever it might be.
Any containers.
I don't go out and buy anything specifically for any of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Once everything, you start, it's a minefield, isn't
it? I know.
It
is. It is. And I could have spent another 10 years adding things to this book. That's one that, like, it's never ending.
Yeah.
Like, where does this end? I actually had to give myself a deadline and say, all right, I can't. Like, the last month, I was adding things to it like you wouldn't believe, just adding more research and information. And I thought, if I don't get out of this phase, I'm never going to finish this book, and it's never going to see the light of day. So,
yeah, but endless question, don't you? Between, it's like I prefer to use synthetic brushes rather, and I know that that's something else in the book, is products that are vegan, that don't use animal hair. You know, you're thinking about wood handles on brushes versus plastic handles on brushes, and I just keep coming back to it, and I may be wrong about this idea that perhaps one of those is better than another, but the core idea at the bottom of all of this is just to make sure that you are considerate about what you use, only buy things that you know. And I know that we are all art tarts and we love going into an art supply shop and going, let's buy some more materials, but just, you know, think about what it is that you're buying. Are you actually going to use it in your current project? What's the end result of the work that you're working on? Just planning your supplies a little bit and making sure that if you've got materials, or perhaps, you know, you've had a project that you've worked on in the past and you bought a whole load of paints, you know, maybe you bought oil paints and you don't use them now, you prefer acrylic or vice versa. Make sure that either use up the materials that you've already got or find somebody to give them away to before they go off, so that what's gone
Which
into
I do quite
making
often.
Those, you know, is not, is, has not been wasted.
Yeah, exactly. I get given samples from different art companies quite often, and more often than not, I won't use them. I've got my system. You might be surprised. My materials and the things that I use, the brushes, they all fit into a single box. I move around a lot, so I have to.
Yeah,
I have to do that. Just to be able to move from one location to another, so it's not the biggest pain in the butt. But my process doesn't take that much. It doesn't need a lot of things. And I don't fit. Yeah, you're right. We do walk into an art shop and think, oh my God, this is heaven. It's like Christmas. I'm exactly the same. And if I don't hold myself back, I will buy anything and everything.
Yeah.
But I don't need it. In the back of my mind, I'm just thinking, I will never use that, or I'll use that once, or whatever. With these companies that give me samples, I give these off to friends who need them.
Yeah.
Brushes is the biggest thing. I get a lot of brushes sent to me, and I've got my set brushes. I'm very particular with them, like most artists are. So I'll give them away. Yeah, give them to someone else.
My brushes also go through this sequencing thing. You know, they start off as nice, beautiful brushes, and then they end up being
nubs.
Lovely, lovely, roughed up, messed up, squidgy ones that have been, you know, they just look awful. I am not very good to my brushes.
I'm not either. I actually at times will look at my brush and just think, oh, you poor thing, what have I done to you? I do that. I say that to myself very often. Yeah, they go, I put them through hell. Yeah.
And that's probably one of the downsides, I think, of acrylics versus with oils. With acrylics, you kind of really do have to wash. I mean, I know that some artists just leave their brushes sitting in water. I can't do that because they tend to curl a bit, and then they. But
they
with
do,
oils,
yeah.
you can just wipe them. You know, you can use vegetable oil, can't you, and just wipe them.
Yeah, exactly. And the pigment will fall out with an oil binder. With an acrylic binder, you can sit a paint that's got, that's full of acrylic paint, sorry, a brush that's full of paint in water, and it will still go hard.
Yeah.
So you have to wash it straight away. So yeah, you're right. We do, the process is more washing, more washing, more washing.
All right.
And it's intensive.
It is.
One thing that I do want to emphasize is what you were saying earlier, is that we can't do everything. Take one part of the book a year at a time or a month at a time or whatever, and put that into your process. I don't expect everybody to be able to afford all of these things all at once and completely change what they're doing. Just bring on one thing here and there, and it's making a difference. You imagine if... How many artists are there in the world? I'm not sure. It's
like lots.
18 million in the US alone or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. If everybody made one single little change, and it could just be the easiest thing, you know, the thing that's easiest for them at that time, that's a huge difference on the environment or even their health and everybody's health around them. I certainly don't expect everyone to pick up the book and go, I'm doing everything tomorrow. I'm doing, you know, all of these recommendations.
All right. There's one thing that I want to touch on before we perhaps close up. And that is the idea of packaging, because I think there's a lot of packaging that can be reused. I reuse a lot of food packaging as paint mixing pots, as storage pots, that kind of thing. But also packaging, we're all buying more online now and we're selling more online now. And there's a company in the UK, Jacksons, and they now package. When things come, it's packed in recycled paper. There's not bubble wrap in there. They use a kind of shredded concertina type.
Yeah, I know that one.
Card thing. And I keep it all. I'm just like this womble that keeps all the packaging.
I'm a packaging hoarder myself.
To reuse. Yeah. And there's somebody I know, Faye Bridgewater, she, all her neighbors know that she uses. So she keeps those Amazon Jiffy bags that you get. I have to say, I tend not to get things in, but all her neighbors know. So they keep them all and she makes them into those painting storage bags.
Right.
So that it's all
one of the questions. Yeah, and those for a smaller painting, that's probably very easy. At the scale that I paint at quite often, I get a lot of questions from other artists who paint at the same scale. Where do you find your boxes?
Yeah.
And I'll be perfectly honest, packaging my paintings is the one part of the business that I just, if I could not do it, that would be great because it's so annoying.
Yeah.
Have to find the correct box, has to be rigid, has to be flat and straight and big enough, which can be a problem. I go to the local bicycle shop and just raid there. I ask them, can I raid your recycling bin? And they say, go for it. And they're usually the right size.
Yeah.
Sometimes the electronic stores, you know, really
TV
big
boxes.
TV, like, the biggest TVs you can imagine. Are also really good. You've still got to cut them down and customize them for your painting.
You need to have a kind of 3D mind in kind of construction engineering, all those maths classes where you drew out a net of a box come in useful.
Exactly.
I've also heard people say contacting undertakers. Apparently coffins come in really big cardboard packaging.
Is that right? I hadn't thought of that one.
Haven't done that yet. But
I'll ask my local one.
There's a thought. but on that front, because I think it's also balanced with this idea of presenting yourself as a professional artist. And I reuse and keep everything. So I've got corner protection that came, that's kind of cardboard corner
with the
protection.
Canvases, yeah.
Yeah, it came with the wooden
panels.
I reuse
them too.
And I've reused all of those. But sometimes it feels like it's a little bit less professional when you're packing and sending it out to somebody. So they've just bought this.
Leave a note.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Make it part of your thing.
That's what I do. I have a little printed with compliment slip.
Yep.
And I say, this has been packaged using recycled boxes and bubble wrap and whatever else it might be.
Yep.
Please reuse this packaging for, you know, whenever you might need it as well.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And then they go, oh, that's great. I've actually had clients, collectors email me back and go, oh, I'm so glad that you're doing everything for the environment. And the box was, you know, it was a fridge box and, you know, whatever it might have been. Oh, we ended up needing that anyway. So that was great. Yeah, people appreciate it. It's that small thing that you don't use it as a marketing ploy. I tried that once. This is my eco-friendly art. Buy my eco-friendly art. Nobody searches for that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it's something that they do appreciate later on down the track when they, you know, they realize, oh, this is actually painted in this way and packaged in this way. Yeah, it's just an appreciate, you know, they appreciate it. And that's enough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite proud of the fact that I think, so I've been doing and selling work for 10 years now and I've never bought a single piece of bubble wrap.
I haven't either. Or boxes. I've never bought a single box.
Well, I bought one box once and it was so expensive. I thought, I'm not doing that again. So, yeah, you know, it does embarrass the children. You know, I can be out and about and you see a big flat box and I just go, oh, wait a minute. Hang on a minute. I need to get that. And they're like, oh, Mum, what? And I'm like, it's a good shaped box. I've got to carry it home. And my husband says, unless they're artists,
they won't. Yeah, exactly. Unless they're artists, they'll never understand. So don't try explaining it to them.
No. And it, as long as, I think if you can, what I do with boxes sometimes is I can, if you cut the extra flap, if it's the wrong shape, you know, you can cut the extra flaps off so that it can be folded flat, or even just, you know, just cutting it so that you've got your raw materials to construct a new box from.
Exactly.
Okay. Just tell me before we finish on printed material. So again, on things that you're going to do that perhaps is part of what you send out or marketing material. How do you find printers who use soy-based inks? I mean, recycled paper is one thing, but you mentioned printers who use soy-based inks.
Yeah. So in Australia, we actually have a few that specifically only do recycled paper and soy-based inks.
Okay.
So I have sought them out specifically. Where I did my apprenticeship, my graphic design and printing, pre-printing press apprenticeship does it as well. So I'm quite lucky that they help me out there. Yeah.
So that's something really that if you Google or search in your area, see what's around. Environmental.
I'm pretty sure even those bigger online ones like Moo, I think Moo does soy-based ink and I know that they do recycled paper, recycled card. I don't know if Vistaprint does. I'm not sure of their environmental credentials.
Okay.
But I do know that Moo is quite good. I'm not sure where they're based though. They might be UK or somewhere in Europe. I'm not sure.
But again, I think the same thing applies here. And I think often what happens is we buy too many of those things and then you end up with a stack that you don't use. So just, again, this goes back to the consideration, isn't it? Each time you're making a decision, how much do you want to buy? Is there a slightly different choice that you can make at this stage for one element? You can't do it all at once. I feel slightly less guilty now.
I'm sure you're doing just fine for the environment. Don't feel guilty at all. You know what? Something I have wondered through this whole process of writing the book and doing everything that I do, going out of my way to make everything eco-friendly. Why is it that it's up to the artist to make their art eco-friendly or to choose specific products? Why isn't it Golden Paints or, I mean, maybe I shouldn't be calling out brands specifically, but why aren't these big paint brands and these big canvas brands doing the right thing? Some of them are, but they have a line of products that are eco-friendly, which is, you know, a small percentage of their main product line. And that kind of annoys me. Where I feel like part of the reason for writing this book was to get enough people to put pressure on these brands so that, you know, to call them out and just say, hey, guys, you've got one linen or, you know, one line of this or whatever it might be. How come it's not 90% of what you do? Because it's what we want.
Yeah.
They just, I guess, they're in the business for profit, and that's what they're looking out for, which you can understand.
You can understand, but it just comes down, doesn't it, as well, to our choice as consumers. And again, you know, we all have different choices that we make on that, you know, whether you eat meat, whether you eat organic meat, whether you, you know, how you balance that with your budget, all of those kind of elements and things that you need to consider. But I think a lot of it is what the market is interested in. And perhaps that's where we can do it. And it is about a little bit about publicity. So if you know a small paint manufacturer in your area who are making paint in a different way, like I know when I see that, you know, the Jackson switch their packaging materials, they get a lot of good shout outs from artists
who are
happy that they've done it that way. So
yeah,
maybe it is just about just checking in and making sure that wherever you buy your materials from, that you are interested in a different solution. And that maybe
there's a lot of smaller brands that are coming through and doing the right thing as well. Natural Paint Co, Hydrocryl, those sorts of brands who are making natural paint, who I think are going to put a lot of pressure on the big guys as well.
Yes.
So if they're taking market share away from them, they're going to realize, oh, we've got an actual competitor here, and this is why maybe we should think about what we're doing. But I think it's if every artist in the world sent a single email, I mean, that's a pretty big ask. Anybody who has purchased my book and thought this is great, let's put some pressure on these guys, anybody who does that, sends an email, that's a lot of emails so far that these brands could be getting and helping change their direction. It's something that and that's all I want, just to see that shift. I know it probably won't be in my lifetime that where we get to a 90-10 rather than a 10-90 sort of balance with eco-friendly and traditional products, but it is shifting
in
very small ways, but better than nothing.
Better than nothing. Maybe that's the mantra that we need to finish on. Anything is better than nothing. So I hope that has whetted your appetite. I'm going to put links in the show notes. So wherever you're listening to this, if you swipe up, you should see all the links. You can go over to Scott's website. That's Scott Denholm, but you said Scott Denham. But you spell
it like the jeans.
Spell it like Denholm. And there is also a link to where you can buy the book, and it's called The Artist Guide to Eco-Friendly Art. You can get it as a hard copy, a paperback, an ebook, or you can buy it from Amazon in your area. So you can find Scott on Instagram at @ScottDenham_OceanArt, but I will put all these links below where you can find out more. Slightly reassured, knowing that I can probably do better, and just hoping that we can move things in the right direction, perhaps.
Yeah, don't feel guilty.
Okay.
Just keep doing what you're doing. You're doing fine.
Okay. Before we finish, is there anything this week in your busy week of moving and getting settled in a new studio, what has been your little lift of inspiration or excitement or something nice or funny that's happened this week?
It's not a new inspiration, because it's something that I've always been inspired by, but and that's the Australian landscape. Just the contrasts and the extremes from one region to another are just incredible. And if you haven't seen it, you've got to come and see it, because it's so beautiful. When I was young, up until now, have been mildly obsessed with fauna, so different plants that are in regions.
Yeah.
And I just loved as a kid how some flowers or some plants were only in some regions and not others. And Mum, why is this plant here? I saw it down in Victoria. Why isn't it here? You know, this sort of thing. And driving from the central desert. So I was 4 hours south of Uluru. I don't know right. if you know where that is on a map, yeah. but you go to the center of the continent and it's right about there in the red center. And the contrast between there and here, which is just this tropical, lush. I haven't seen anything this green in quite a while. Yeah, staggering. So yeah, just the different, the different trees and flowers and things that I've seen through my travel over the last couple of weeks. Yeah, that's my inspiration and something that I will definitely be taking into my art moving forward, whether that's with my ocean art or with a separate, a whole separate body of art and maybe an alter ego or something. I'm not sure, but yeah, that's. That's where I'm coming from.
It's an interesting shift, isn't it? Because I think when something happens like that and it surrounds you and it's the focus of your art, it can't help but change things. So, you know,
we are a product of our environment. And we paint that as artists, that's what we paint. You know, that's why I have been painting the ocean for so long. And now this red dust has gotten into my blood and I can't get it out, I think.
Well, I'll look forward to keeping in touch and seeing how that changes then. I'm going to just to share with you an Andy Goldsworthy video that I found on YouTube, because he was an artist that I found when I was doing A-levels. And for anybody who doesn't know him, he makes these real construction sculptures that are designed to dissolve and disintegrate really with natural form. So, you know, he doesn't have any worry about cotton canvas because it's all done with leaves and stones with cracks in and ice and things held together, pinned together with thorns. But I just remember them being very, very beautiful. And this idea of taking what exists in nature and how we as artists can just put a different, it's the same thing, it's the same leaves, but how an artist has a skill to take that and make you look at it and reconsider it in a different way. So I'm going to put a link to the YouTube video on that just as a reminder to go over and be inspired by what Andy Goldsworthy does. And that's it. Thank you so much for joining us and for giving your time and all of this information that you've spent your time putting together. I will probably try to do, I'm going to commit to doing a little bit more of an in-depth.
I should say thank you as well. I wholeheartedly appreciate your time and thank you so much for having me. The pleasure has been mine, all mine. So thank you, Alice.
Well, it's really nice. I can't tell you, we get an awful lot of, what shall I say, to be polite, interesting podcast guest requests, most of which get a very straightforward no thank you. But yours came through and I thought, no, this could be really good and very useful and helpful, because I know that it's something that people consider. So I really appreciate all the time that you've spent putting together this information and for sharing it with us today. So Scott Denham, thank you very, very much for being with us on Art Juice. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. The sludge thing has one thing about it where if you're reusing sludge that has soap in it, can break down the paint. If some people do, like, so if they're using if they're putting together the sludge from just their wash, but also from when they've been washing their brushes, that soap can break down the binder. Thank you.